Hello and welcome to another edition of ESPN Scrum Reset. No, don't flick this off. I may sound a bit different. No, I'm not Sam Bruce. He has headed over to the US for an ESPN summit. So it's Brittany Mitchell taking over. And if you remember, I was on deck last year. So it's good to be back. And I'm joined yet again by Christy Doran. Christy, how you going? It's good to chat to you once again.
Good to see you. You're a much better voice than Brucey anyway. So shout out to Brucey. He probably, he'd be on business class, wouldn't he, over there?
Oh, I think he's wishing he was on business. Especially how long that flight is.
Yeah, not an easy long trip to the States. But great to have you. And actually probably a pretty apt and opportune time, Britt, that there's not too many in the Aussie rugby media circles that cover women's rugby as much as you. And Wallaroo Super W final, fair bit to talk about. And geez, there's been a lot to start the week with the Wallaroo squad selection and an AGM that happened on Monday as well. So heaps to sink our teeth into, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's a shout out to the Waratahs women after 2 years off. Last year didn't make the final, year before beaten by the Drua. This year they got up in a pretty emphatic fashion, 50-14, the end result up in Ballymore. So good work from the Waratahs girls, and obviously Anzac round in Super Rugby, and there was plenty going on the pitch across the weekend, across in Australia and across the ditch. Aussies gave it a fair fight. Brumbies the only team to get up over their Kiwi opposition, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Of course, first, as you mentioned, the Rugby Australia AGM results were released on Monday afternoon. Christy, before you get into your thoughts, I think we should just straight off the bat, they announced it was a $9.2 million deficit for last year. They did say that it is smaller than they have had on other World Cup years, 2015, 2019. But for you, what does that say of the state of Australian rugby?
Oh, it's obviously not a good figure. Anytime you're in the loss-making business, it doesn't reflect well, but it was no great surprise. So everyone knew that was coming, so there wasn't the shock and awe, and I think maybe perhaps people thought there'd be a higher deficit off the back of the $2.6 million budget blowout from the World Cup campaign. I think people thought there was going to be more. So, you know, but there were some other things that came out of that which were interesting. Of the $80 million debt facility that Rugby Australia took out towards the back end of last year, instead of a private equity deal, they've already tapped into 50 of the $80 million. That's a huge amount of money. It means that the money that Rugby Australia will get from the Lions series in 2025, that's all pretty much going to go towards paying off that debt facility. So it's at 10% is the interest rate on that as well. So that's about $5 million a year that they're having to pay off there. So it does put in up in lights the challenges that lay ahead, and there could be even more challenges with the Melbourne Rebels if indeed the Rebels decide, you know what, regardless of what happens on Friday with the creditors meeting, off the back of PwC's report into their voluntary administration, there's a strong likelihood that RA will look to close the Rebels down from the end of this year. And if the Rebels, if that indeed is the case, RA can prepare for a legal battle in the courts, which is a costly exercise, and probably millions will go to that as well. So they've got to brace for a few storms whilst this is all happening as well.
Yeah, it's definitely not looking great. I think we need to mention that they have done some right things here. There's been an increased funding in the women's game, which is just something that needed to be done. And there's also increased spending in the community game, which a lot of people have been crying out for a long time. So they've been making the right steps. And as you said, they've already drawn out $50 million from that debt facility. Was just reading some news on the Raw this morning, and it has been noted that documents say that there's an expectation of a $225 million windfall from the British and Irish Lions and the 27 World Cup. That's the expectation. So, I mean, there's some, I guess, a silver lining on the horizon. There's an expectation coming that there will be a significant windfall in the future.
Yeah, it is. And it was interesting. So yesterday, the COO, the Rugby Australia Chief Executive Phil Wall, Dan Herbert, spoke to the media at about just after 4 o'clock Australian Eastern Standard Time. And the underlying message was that they've got to ensure that the game is set up for success going forward, because as it stands, if it wasn't for a Lions year next year, the game, unsurprisingly, would be in seriously bad shape and ill health. And it's quite possible that the reality of when COVID hit and the game was paralysed for quite a while was that it was so close to going under and returning to an amateur age. That would have been a real possibility once again if it wasn't for the Lions coming next year. So some of the decisions undoubtedly over the next couple of weeks, and I think there will be a decision, there will be a considered plan, a statement from Rugby Australia around what they planned for the Rebels. Some of these statements and action plans is just in to try to ensure that Australian rugby is sustainable going forward, because at the moment, for a long, long time, they've been spending beyond their means and not being able to stay afloat. So it's a really thorny, difficult subject. Melbourne Rebels, you've got a feel for everyone involved in that organisation, but also the supporters, which have there's been thousands over the years. But for the greater good, it does seem like the Rebels won't exist beyond 2024, is my strong opinion of what will occur.
Which is a sad state. Like, as you mentioned, there's thousands of supporters, there's players there. It's also detrimental to the women's game as well. I think that's a lot of the chat has been very much focused on Super Rugby Pacific and how it will impact the men's game in Australia. But a lot of the time it's forgotten that this will also mean one of the women's team is gone, how that impacts Super W, Super Rugby Women, the potential to move to a trans-Tasman competition. It's a pretty dire situation. And as you say, if the Rebels failed to exist post 2024, it's not a great look for rugby in Australia.
No, it's a really bad look, but there's been challenges for so many years, pretty much since the inception of the Rebels. Interestingly, the Reds win in 2011, first year the Rebels are around, the Waratahs win in 2014, the Brumbies made the final in 2013, but it's since then there's been a steady decline, probably in overall performance, especially felt at the test level. So in some ways we'll find out perhaps in the years to come as to whether or not Australian rugby is stronger with four or five and what the wider ramifications are with that. But it is a poor look that at the moment, for a long time, it doesn't seem like Australian rugby has been able to support five teams. You compare that to the rugby league and AFL and you go, geez, what's going on there? Even the A-League seems to be expanding. There's some issues with the A-League, but it's not a good place with rugby in Australia that they can't have more than four sides, it seems. What the ramifications are with the broadcast deal is interesting. So there was a change at the Rugby Australia board level as well on Monday. Karen Penrose, who's been one of the great supporters, advocates for women's rugby in the country, she was not re-elected. That's caught Rugby Australia by surprise. When another person is put onto the board as a replacement remains to be seen. But there's going to be an additional external consultant put on regard and trying to ensure that Rugby Australia can get a broadcast level and uplift, because the $29 million they're currently receiving is been such a drastic decrease on what it previously was with Fox Sports, which was $57 million. So they've gone from $57 million to $29 million with a couple of million extra with Contra, which is essentially just advertising. So they need an uplift, otherwise the game's not going to succeed. And one of the things is if Super Rugby returns to either Super Rugby 11 or 10, which it once upon a time was, there's going to be more games. That's the only way it's sustainable. More games, which means more home games for sides, perhaps an easier concept where everyone would play each other twice, home and away. But that's the only way it succeeds, that you get a broadcast level uptick. If it doesn't occur, the game will continue to be in serious strife, because at the moment, none of the Super Rugby franchises really succeed because they just don't play enough home games and there's not enough supporters that come through the gates. And I will add, as Phil Waugh said, though, having more home games doesn't always work, because as we've seen with the Rebels, it actually runs at a loss when they have home games because they can't get more than 10,000 people that go through the gates there. So some big things on the horizon in Aussie rugby, and yesterday's AGM with some of that up in lights.
I guess the question is, there was a few weeks ago news that there was an external group that was coming together. They were trying to raise funds. They wanted to take over the Rebels and move them out and join an A-League club in Melbourne, just outside of the Melbourne city area, the precinct. Is that realistic? Has that gone to water? Like, what's happened there?
Well, you imagine, and I know that the Melbourne Rebels and the former directors there have been working on this for quite a while. They're hoping to sit down with Rugby Australia over the coming days, I'd imagine, perhaps weeks. They've guaranteed it for the next 2 years, that consortium, the private consortium, was hoping to raise $20 to $30 million. But that's not really long enough. Two years doesn't give any kind of assurance that that things will be successful going down, that there'll be blue skies ahead, because as we know, 2 years only takes you to 26, and this next broadcast cycle is supposed to start that very year. So, you know, how you would possibly be able to attract players down to a franchise which is in such a precarious position that can't really necessarily exist for beyond those couple of years, I can't imagine that you'd be able to lure big names down there, or even guys that are wanting to play and women that are wanting to play international rugby, because they wouldn't have the security of the franchise existing beyond 1 or 2 years. So I just don't think it's long enough. They would have to be able to guarantee it until 2030. And even then, though, I think there's probably going to be players already looking for the exit at the moment. They've got about 20 players that are signed for next year. That's only half a Super Rugby squad, as we know. And I imagine that others will be looking over their shoulders over the next week or two with spots overseas. The market's not as strong as what it was once upon a time overseas, where you could probably get a job pretty much anywhere. But still, it doesn't look pretty for the Melbourne Rebels.
Not at all. And as you mentioned, a few players looking for the exit door. You know, start of the season, Andrew Kellaway had already signed to move up to the Waratahs, things like that. It's as you said, a dire situation. But I guess if we want to move to something a bit more positive within the game in Australia, Tuesday morning, the Wallaroos squad was announced ahead of their Pacific Four series, with only 2 weeks between the Super Rugby women's final on the Sunday, and then they take to the pitch against Canada in their first clash. I guess first we'll touch on that Super Rugby final with the Waratahs, as I mentioned earlier, just absolutely blowing the Drua out of the park, a 50-14 just demolition job, realistically. The Waratahs are a bit nervy at the start, but just came through in the end. Well, the Drua, I guess, it all came down to some pretty poor discipline. I think it's 4 yellow cards and a red card by the end of the game. The red card pretty ugly, with their fly half stomping on the Waratahs reserve number 9. It's a pretty ugly sight, but realistically, the rest of the game was all Waratahs. Desiree Miller scoring a hat trick, Maya Stewart scoring a double. It was a really impressive match. Christy, I'm sure you made sure to watch at least a few minutes of it, but it was a pretty impressive all-round performance from the Waratahs. And I guess based off what they'd been doing all year, you can't imagine it was going to go any other way.
Well, yeah, they were unbeaten going into that match. And you're right, they were nervy early on, a couple of drop balls, particularly by the forwards. But they managed to quickly find and hit their straps, didn't they? Impressive, their back line. And you've got to say, Georgie Friedrichs was just elite. I know that she was the Wallaroos Player of the Year just a couple of years ago, and she showed her class there at outside centre. Really poised, composed, straight runner. Scored a try towards the end, which capped off a really great game. I actually thought I had her in as the player of the match. It didn't actually go to her, but it just showed the differences between the two sides, their back line. Lane Morgan was elite at nine. Awesome decision to play on quickly from a scrum. Looks right, passes left to Miller. It showed her quality. You know, it's no surprise that she was picked in the Wallaroo squad as one of a couple of halfbacks in that side. It did get back to 17-14 though early in the second half with another error, I think, off the kickoff, and then Drua scored off the back of a rolling Moore. But it really very quickly it was obvious that the Waratahs were going to run away with it, which is what they did. Maya Stewart, how good she is! I think it was saying that the leading try scorer for the Waratahs throughout their history, and it's no surprise she just continually is in the right position at the right time, and she scored her double very easily in the end.
Yeah, definitely. She's actually the leading try scorer in the whole of the competition. She scored 36 tries, and I think she only made her debut in 2020, 21. I'm pretty sure she missed out a year with her ACL injury as well. So it's incredible, especially if you put it in comparison to the men's Super Rugby Pacific. I think it's what 50, oh no, 61 tries for the top try scorer in Super Rugby Pacific. So, you know, she might be knocking down the door on that record in a few years
Yeah.
time, the rate that she's going. And as you said, she's just a fantastic player. She's her ability to just break through tackles is just astounding. And then she's also got the pace out wide as well. Desiree Miller as well. She's got just the speed to break around the outside. They're both. Not surprisingly, named in the Wallaroos squad, and you'd have to expect that they'll be starting come game day against Canada in a few weeks' time. I guess if we break down that.
Let's break it down. I just want to ask you, what did you think of, there was a few regulars that were left out, but also last year's starting 10 for most of the year, which was Karis Dallinger, Ivana Wong also left out, and then the Waratahs trio of Annabelle Cody, Sarah Nagama, Emily Robinson. So perhaps a bit of a changing of the guard, but also very much saying Joe Yap, I've not been particularly thrilled with the Queensland Reds. They only had three players in there. They struggled all year and they've paid the price, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely. As you said, Karis Dallinger failed to make the team. There's no news if that was an injury issue or not. She was carried off in the last Reds game against the Tars. She wasn't listed as an injury, unavailable through injury. So.
It's. She's. I asked the Wallaroos media manager this morning around that, and there is a. I think she does have an MCL injury, but that wasn't the reason why she wasn't in that squad. Otherwise, she would have been put in, alongside Emily Chancellor, not being available for selection because of her injury. So that's very much the Reds have struggled, and you pay the price, which I like. There's competition for spots, and we know that Dallinger's a good player, got a good kicking game, but you've got to do more, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting you mentioned that kicking game, but if you watched it was I tweeted the other night following the Tars win, and you know, do you just transplant that Tars back line straight into the Wallaroos? They have just been that impressive. And Arabella McKenzie last year was playing in centres with Dallinger playing in fly half, but I think given just how well McKenzie has been playing at fly half, her kicking game is really stepped up. Even just kicking from the tee has been really impressive. Just her game awareness and how she's moved the ball, shifted the ball has really stepped up this season. I think she came home early from the UK just to get her head right, and I think that's worked wonders for her. But as you mentioned, Ivania Wong failed to make the team. I think that's just purely off the back of the Reds not performing. She didn't get enough ball. They just couldn't get the ball out to her, and she couldn't do much. If you're a wing, you can't do much when you're not getting any front foot ball and not getting any time on the ball. And like you said, I think there was those big names, Emily Robinson, Sarah Nagama, Annabelle Cody not making it. I think that is just purely Jo Yap saying that this is her first squad. It's time to move on. We've had a solid lineup for quite a long time, but there's young players coming through. Like you look at the breakdown, five Force players have made the lineup. and 8 Brumbies players, which is pretty astounding. I don't think they've, I'd have to go back, but I don't think they would have had this many Brumbies players in a squad before. And I think that's just a reflection on the Force and the Brumbies were, well, the Force especially were the next best Australian team this whole season. Michaela Leonard being named captain yet again, which is also an interesting, I guess, a throwback to last year, the fact that they named Piper Duck as a long-term captain. She didn't get to play at all that season. It's just more the question of why you'd name a long-term captain when you knew the coach wouldn't be there for following you. But
I never understood that because she was also injured at the time when she got announced, and it's just adding more pressure onto a young player that's still pretty fresh into that environment. So it was a head scratcher at the time. It remains one. There's no doubt that Piper Duck's a really well-spoken young lady, young player, and she's clearly part of that Wallaroos set up at the moment, and she missed one or two games throughout that regular season, but we saw her presence on the ball, both sides of the ball on the weekend, and she's a really great ambassador for the Wallaroos. So good to have options, isn't it? And I'm sure the Wallabies and Joe Schmidt would like a few himself going forward before his first squad selection in a couple of months on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Michaela Leonard being named captain is a really smart choice from Joe Yap. She's a very strong player, but also very like rugby brain is astounding. And she's a great leader for that team. She's a little bit older, a little bit wiser, you may say, and she's got a great presence in that squad. And I think she's a very well-liked player. So I would say that's a really smart move in that instance. But I guess one of the biggest inclusions that may have taken some by surprise, I'm a bit in the surprise camp, but also not so much surprised, but that 16-year-old Shalom Seo Aso, who made her debut for the Reds this year. She started on the wing, where she looked just a little bit out of place. But when she got moved into centres, oh, geez, she's a great player. And at 16 years old, you can see that she's got absolute potential to be, you know, a Wallaroos great. The issue will be, of course, she's being hounded by quite a few different options. I think she's in the sevens environment, but also rugby league. And a few other sports are chasing her down. So it'll be the Wallaroos will have to work hard to keep her in the setup. But geez, for 16 years old and making a Wallaroos squad after, what, five games in Super Rugby, it's a pretty impressive feat.
We know that Jo Yap, she kind of hinted that there'd be one or two youngsters in that side. And we've seen that. And we spoke to Jo less than a week ago, and she said, one of the big differences between Australian rugby and the UK, which has been much more professional for longer for the 15-a-side game there, is that the athletes in Australia are remarkable compared to what they're getting up there. The fact that you've got 16, 17-year-olds regularly playing in Super Rugby Women's goes to show the talent that's here, and now it's about emerging. And she said that the game understanding is probably where there might be a bit of a difference between some of the heavyweights up in the Northern Hemisphere and the Wallaroos, where athletes are picked and then probably the game understanding comes next. So, awesome to see. And there's a couple of 17-year-olds in that squad too. So May 11th, that first game, isn't it, at Sydney Football Stadium, Allianz, a doubleheader really with the Brumbies and the Waratahs to battle. To have the opportunity, the added exposure there, I think is awesome. And it's a big first game against Canada before taking on the United States and then New Zealand.
Yeah, it's Pacific Four. It's a pretty quick tournament. Just the three matches: Canada, USA, and then New Zealand. And really important they get a good start. There's not a lot of you know, there's not a lot of time to get things wrong, and there's not a lot of time to learn. Given that a place in the WXV1 is on the line, and they'll be determined to get there again. Last year, they had a really impressive WXV1 tournament. They beat France for the first time in, I think it was about 13 or 14 years. So they deserve to be in that top tier environment. And they Jodie Apt did say when she first took on the role that the goal is to be a top 14. And so to do that, they need to win at least one game in this three-game series. Eyes will mainly, most likely be on the United States. They just got absolutely pumped by Canada yesterday morning. But that doesn't mean they should go into this first match and take it as a cruisy test run. They should be eyeing a win. It would Canada, are, I think, are number four in the world, and they are a very impressive team. Another team that are also in that amateur semi-professional bracket. Given the exposure and the investment that's now being put into this Wallaroos team, there'll be expectations that they really take it to Canada in that opening game and really make a statement.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's essential ahead of the World Cup, which is, what, 14 months away or so. It's not far away and it's quickly coming up, and it will be a nice little litmus test before Australia obviously hosts the Women's World Cup in 2029.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Definitely. Well, I guess off the back of that, we roll into this weekend's results in the Anzac Day round of Super Rugby Pacific. And as we mentioned, there was just the one win from the Australian side, the Brumbies getting over the Hurricanes, but gee whiz, that's a pretty impressive effort. The Hurricanes unbeaten all season. And I guess Canberra's a bit of a hurdle venue for the Hurricanes. I think it's six straight they've lost in Canberra now, GIO Stadium. Not many people are fans of GIO Stadium, but maybe, and they've probably joined the list. The Brumbies are probably enjoying bringing the Hurricanes over and playing them down there. But what did you take from that game? Noel Alessio probably stood up the most, and also the centre combination of Len Ikitau and Tamati Tua, just really took it to that Hurricanes team that just looked a bit off the boil.
They're not the first side that comes back from Fiji and then gets beaten the week after. You've got the travel is probably a bit of a factor in a lot of these games, and we know that the Force always struggle when they get on the road. But yeah, you know, I tipped the Brumbies, and I just, people know that they grow a leg or two when they play at home, so it wasn't a huge surprise. I didn't think they beat them in consecutive quarterfinals as well. So they do seem like they match up pretty well against them. They don't have that fear factor that they might when they take on other sides, like the Chiefs, for instance, or the Blues away, which is what we saw a week earlier when they got absolutely smashed. So there was always going to be that bit of a bounce back off the back of being hammered by the Blues at Eden Park a week earlier. But you're right to point out that centres combo. Tamati Tua was absolutely the player of the game. I thought he was superb, and probably the player, close to the player of the round anyway, from an Australian perspective. So direct. He took the ball to the line. He managed to break the line, score a try. He was influential in that surge that the Brumbies made where they scored three tries inside the opening 20 minutes to really set the game up. And then they hang on in the second half. They don't concede a point after Geordie Barrett scores early in the 45th minute. So their defence is probably the thing that stood up. And it came off the back as well of a really good, an improved effort at the Rolling Maul, which came off the back of a clinical line-out, which we haven't always said this year. And awesome to see Alan Alalatoa return too. And I thought Rory Scott was just superb at open-side flanker. He's a guy that we've only seen bits and pieces of because the back row is such a strong area for the Brumbies. But I just love what he provides on both sides of the ball. And we saw him work alongside Charlie Kale and Rob Valentini, who were also really impressive. It was a great showing, great response from the Brumbies. And you imagine that with the next couple of weeks ahead, they should be able to build a few more wins and really look to challenge for that top two, because it's essential for them if they're going to progress really deep and beyond a semi-final this year.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned Charlie Kale, but I mean, I can't get over that guy. He's having an absolute standout season, a debut year, I believe. No,
Last year, he probably played about half a dozen games, but because there's Pete Saamu and there's Rob Bellatini, last year probably didn't quite get the recognition. Now he's regularly starting, and we're seeing an explosive back rower who is absolutely going to be in that Wallabies mix. Whether or not he starts, I wouldn't think so, but he'll be in and around that squad.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's not all doom and gloom for the Hurricanes. They may have lost the first game, but I mean, they still were, they maybe weren't quite on top of it like they usually are, but they were still very impressive. Their own line out of their own was on song. Their scrum, geez, they really gave it to the Brumbies a few times at the scrum as well.
And they were missing Asafa Lua. That's the big one. He's been the best hooker of the comp so far, and he's out for, I think, 6 to 8 weeks. So you take out one of the former hookers, so such a powerful guy, particularly with ball in hand. It's like taking out Tony Elatupo from the Rebels of the Reds previously. He's just a guy that always gives you front football, and he's grown a leg with his maturity in the extra years that he's now playing. So, yeah, you're right. They're still at the top of the table as well.
Yeah, and it's astounding when you look at that table. Mathematically, everyone's still a chance. I mean, there may be a few teams, Force, Waratahs, that have probably fallen away, may have missed their timing. But the Crusaders turned it around. They absolutely punished the Rebels to open the round, which I guess if you're a Rebels fan, it was not pretty viewing. And then so they've also entered the equation, which, you know, 2-3 weeks ago when they lost to the Tars a few weeks ago, you were probably saying that's it. That's their season done. It's kaput. And now you're thinking, geez, the Crusaders again, can they do this?
Well, I know that friends of a couple of different pods, you know, Between Two Pows, Shawnee Maloney with Steve Hoyles, they were talking about, you know, do you put a line through the Crusaders? Well, you think it was probably a bit premature. They generally win their games at home. They beat the Chiefs not long ago, and now they've, 39-0, wasn't it, against the Rebels, and they're hosting the Queensland Reds this week. They'll be looking at that going, you know what, the Reds, yes, they've been playing well, and we'll touch on their game against the Blues in a second, but yeah, the Crusaders are 10th, but they're only 3 points outside the top eight. So it's just one win. And if they get a couple of guys back later in the season, like Cody Taylor and Will Jordan, then there'll be a real chance.
Well, I mean, just having Barrett back on the weekend, just their line out, it'd been an absolute dog's breakfast a few weeks ago, and now suddenly they're winning absolutely everything. So just the inclusion of one big player, just how it turns your season right around. And I guess it's just something similar that's happening at the Reds at the moment. They've lost a couple of guys through suspension. How big that's going to cost them. On Saturday night, they absolutely took it to the Blues. But unfortunately, just couldn't get it done in the last few minutes. But it was an impressive, I guess, turnout from that team. After some people probably looked at that game thinking this is, it's going to be Blues all the way, especially what they did to the Brumbies a week earlier. But the Reds were very impressive. It's just unlucky they just lost their steam in the end.
Oh, it was probably the game of the tournaments to date. It was unbelievable. And you think when Tim Ryan scores that third try where he turns inside out Mark DeLeo, who's probably in the top two or three wingers of the world at the moment, to complete a hat-trick on your run-on debut as a 20-year-old, it was just epic to see, and it's so impressive. It really it totally outshone Sully Vunivalu, and that probably is a bit of a concern if you're Sully, having played for the Wallabies, going to a World Cup, and there were questions around that selection. Well, there's even more questions when someone chips and chases 7 metres out and just looks like he's a born player to play rugby union, and we saw that on the weekend. But yeah, another game. You know, they let one slip through their fingers against the Hurricanes back in Super Round, and this is one where Liz Kiss will be just thinking, far out, we've dropped that one. And 41-34 in the end, 3 tries the Blues score in the last 11 minutes. Hoskins Satutu started it off, but it was just a real desire to play. They probably felt like the Reds, they took the decision to take the points. Lawson Crichton have a shot at goals to ensure that they have a 7-point buffer. And you just thought that, is this the right option? I wasn't sure, because I knew the Blues, it would give them a chance. It would allow them to put the pressure on their next kick return. And as it turns out, Kurt Eklund scores some pretty soft defense probably in the end, and then turnover ball for them. Think from Joe Brile just allows Caleb Clark on the left-hand wing to find space and then turn it back on the inside to Sam Knock to score. It was amazing rugby. It was a great way to finish the regular round. It for once you left Super Rugby thinking this was a round where people could actually enjoy, get amongst. There was jeopardy on the line. It was actually a really great thing for Super Rugby despite the loss. And they're probably one-sided nature in the fact that 4-1 to New Zealand over the weekend. But it was an awesome, awesome round that we could appreciate Super Rugby for what it is. And a lot of tries, some suspect defence in the second half at times. But Joe Schmidt would have been thinking, yeah, there's enough to work here.
Yeah, definitely. And as you mentioned, they head over to Christchurch this week. It's they're still without Tate McDermott and
Sarah, he's got a broken hand or thumb, so he's still out for at least another month. He's probably one of the bigger ones. They've got Zane Dongle, who has been out for the last couple of weeks. I'm not sure if he'll be back this one, but Jordan Bataille clearly missed the weekend, but Josh Fluke made a really encouraging return himself. So yeah, we've actually seen Kalani Thomas get a real... I've been pretty critical of him over the last couple of years, but he spent the NPC season or the I-Team Cup, whatever it's called these days, the provincial competition in New Zealand. He goes over there and he plays a lot of minutes, and we've seen him come back a much improved player. So you lose Tate McDermott, but fortunately Kalani Thomas has had a strong couple of games. They'll be still thinking, you know, we welcome back Fraser McWright, who's done his tackles school homework, was shaved off a week there. So they've got enough.
Listening to his description of tackle school, and I'm not sure if people heard it the other day, that essentially he tackles a few tackle bags, they film it, they send it in, they have their defense coach look over it and go, yep, that's how you tackle. I'm sorry, but that's just absolutely ridiculous. Is that seriously what it's coming to? And to say that will allow you to take a week off? I mean that's a discussion for another time, but come on.
You would have thought that's under 12 sort of stuff, wouldn't you? That, you know, particularly someone like Fraser McWright, who's constantly around the collision, making 20 tackles a week, generally speaking. I tend to agree with you. It's a good point, but it's probably not the first time we've questioned things with what the judiciary systems do around the world. So, yeah.
But yes, the Reds, the next week it will be a test. It will be tough, and we'll see where they're really at. They're still obviously in that mix of making it in the top eight. I'm not too sure where they're sitting at the moment. They're sitting at sixth on the table, so they're definitely still in the mix, and alongside the Rebels, who are also sitting fifth, who just dropped down after that loss to the Crusaders on the weekend, and they'll be desperate to get some wins themselves, because if they don't, it's really going to test them when it comes to that top eight and finals time. Once you're on the road, it makes everything infinitely harder.
Oh, totally. They've got such a difficult run, the Rebels. So they've got the Blues this week, and then they've got following that, Queensland Reds away in Brisbane, good luck. Then they host the Chiefs. Then they go back to GIO Stadium to take on the Brumbies, and they finish it off by having to go to Lautoka against the Drua. There you don't actually see one match there that you think, you know what, that's a banker, or you're in a real hunt there. They're all challenging games. So they're going to have to try to rely, I think, on bonus points to ensure that they scrape into the top eight. They've still got a couple of games in hand over the Highlanders. There's a 9-point gap there, but you can imagine that the Crusaders are going to start to chalk up one or two. The Drua will obviously get it. I think they'll get another win or two at least across the competition as well. So they're going to hopefully rely on someone like the Highlanders or perhaps even the Waratahs not managing to get a couple of wins there. But it's a really difficult next month for them. Good luck.
Yeah, and it's pretty disappointing given the lineup they have this year. It's probably one of their strongest teams ever. But also, they have had chances to really, make an impact this season. I mean, I thought going to Christchurch, yes, it was going to be really hard against the Crusaders, but given what they'd produced so far this season, I thought, you know, they've got a really good chance here.
Yeah, well, I think the line and the betting agencies was about 11 points in favour of the Crusaders, and I thought that was probably right. But to get beaten 39-0, not good enough. And their entire front row was replaced after 31 minutes. They had line-out struggles. No Lucan Salakai Loto probably hurt both at the line-out, but also the scrum. He's a heavy lock, a guy that's about 125 kilos or so. So they've got to turn it around, and they'll probably hope that someone like the Blues rest one or two guys like Issa Tutu's of the world, because the way that the Blues play, which is so direct under Vern Cotter, that I think will really challenge the Rebels, who don't always put numbers in and around the ruck. So I would be, if I'm Kevin Foot and the Rebels, you've got to think of ways around that to beat the Blues, because they'll come through them. And that's certainly been an area where when they've lost, they've had the Reds go through them and absolutely cut them apart. And that was about a month ago. So probably 5-6 weeks ago now. It's amazing how quickly the season is getting away from us. But yeah, it's a big one, and it's a really challenging run. But it also comes as the constant backroom stuff as to whether or not the Rebels will be in and around the competition going forward. So it can't be an easy one, and all it needs is a few discussions and wavering players, not necessarily completely focused, for things to go pear-shaped quickly. But hopefully they respond well this weekend.
Yeah, and another game on the weekend that I guess had everyone talking was the Waratahs and their loss. To the Chiefs. It was, I mean, the Waratahs did stay in there. The first half, they were in the game. They were in the lead at one stage. They had a lot of possession at the opening stages. It did feel very much like, can they keep that momentum? Do they have the endurance to keep the ball in hand and keep going at that Chiefs defense? And the biggest talking point in the end after that game was that absolutely huge hit from Sammy Penny Binow, and that was in the first 2 minutes, and he just absolutely smashed Tane Edmund. Obviously the discussion became, was it legal, was it not? He's definitely walking a fine line, especially when he's hitting them, you know, pretty close to that shoulder area, just gets it wrong by an inch or two, and that's someone's head. And as it's been mentioned several times, he's done it to a few fly halves this year. Liner at the Reds got the joy of receiving one of those. He was a bit late in that instance and was rewarded, and the Reds were rewarded with a penalty. But he's lined up a few fly halves this season, and I mean, there's nothing in the laws against that. If a fly half if a 10's happy to try and take it to the line, there's nothing wrong with the big bloke just absolutely flattening you and telling you, you know, if you're going to do this, just be aware. But I guess it turned into more of a, do we need to do more to keep the playmaker safe? Or are we getting a bit soft now? I don't want to say that. I don't like the term saying we're going soft, but should we have seen that hit and just gone, wow, good, that's a good solid hit?
Well, I highlighted it on Twitter a few weeks back, because those three, it was Noah Lolasito back in Super Round, passed, distributed the ball, and then gets absolutely demolished. Then it was Tom Liner, which was probably the one that made some people sit up and go, hang on, is that right? And then William Havili, he plays for Moana Pacifica, so he's not going to get the same highlights and same discussion as other 10s across the competition. But the fact that it was so early on in the game and it was such a big hit allowed for people to go, right, hang on, is this right? And in all cases, I think all four of them, they are late tackles. The player doesn't have the ball in their hands. I'm not saying that they were more than a penalty, but it is an interesting point in time, because people like Andrew Johns have said you're at your most vulnerable when you're passing the ball, and none of those playmakers actually held the ball for more than a split second. It was a distributing kind of action that they were having anyway. So you're right, it only does take a split second for that to go wrong or an inch or two higher, and there will be real ramifications. A lot of the time, Sami Panifenial's head is down because he's got he's not thinking about anything other than absolutely smashing this bloke. For the moment, it's working. There's a bit of Jerome Kino in it. He's an enforcer. He was an enforcer, and Finau's doing it really well. I imagine he'll be more a part of the All Blacks than ever before. But it was an interesting discussion. It was actually really nice to see and refreshing to hear both coaches talk about it, and not necessarily in a way that one person was saying that it was completely illegal and blowing up and the other saying it was fine. It was a really nice discussion, which both coaches spoke about. This is probably good rugby. It's a big man on a little man, and it's a part of the game, but wow, things could go wrong. And Clayton McMillan, the Chiefs coach, admitted that and said that he has spoken to Finau around, make sure you get this right, otherwise it's going to hurt the team and yourself. So, yep, fair play for the moment, but I don't know if it'll work going forward as much, because tens will have to be on high alert when they see that guy, that big number six, rush out of the line.
And I guess refs will be right on top of it now as well, keeping an eye on him now that everyone's aware that he likes to rush up and lay these absolute hits. You know, if he splits, as you said, they've already released the ball. If a ref looks at that and goes, no, you're too late, you know, that's a penalty right there. But as you said, the coaches discussing it post-game, Jake Gordon made comments post-game about how he was like, you know what, that's rugby. We're playing a contact sport. Yeah. You're going to get smashed here or there. And he's a smaller bloke himself, so sure, he's copped a few big hits here or there. But I guess in that game as well, Tane Edmed, moving on from that, at the fly half, the playmaker for the team. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are now. The Tards need to get some wins on the board. They haven't been with Tane at playmaker. Will Harrison, he's back from injury, and the minutes that he's been playing in the back half of games, it may come down to the fact that he's against tired defence, but what he's been producing has been some pretty solid stuff. Not just his goal kicking as well has been huge, but you know, you could say that his injection against the Crusaders late in that game was a real turnaround for the Tars. Is it time that Will Harrison gets that starting number 10 jersey?
Yeah, it's definitely a question they're going to be asking. Oh, look, he missed touch actually on the weekend from a penalty. The game was probably slipped through their fingers already at that time. But look, I think it's more around the fact that Waratahs, defensively, they didn't get their numbering and spacing right in that second half. There was one instance where Lalakai Fekete, they just scored through Manu Narawa, and then shortly after that, Tars totally feeling the hammer of the Chiefs, and Fekete decides to go on the blind side rather than the open side. And that meant that they had four or five defenders on the right, on the blind side, up against two defenders or two attackers. And no surprises that Cordius Ratama decides to play the open side. And there just weren't simply enough defenders there for the Tars. They got blown through the middle. Another try, the game's totally done and dusted right there and then. They're missing, I think, eight or nine of their starting front rowers, their contracted front rowers, and that's their first choice three hookers. Julian Heaven's going really well, but it shows the lack of depth. They're having to play massive minutes each week because there's not the depth there. They're calling and leaning upon the shield heavily. Harry Johnson-Holmes is the only guy now that only prop that's not injured, with Tom Ross picking up an injury throughout the game. He fought on for about an extra half an hour, despite the fact he had that leg injury. But that's where the struggles are, I think. Just not being able to rely on a set piece, which is going to be able to stand up. They've done a pretty good job, but eventually it catches up to you, I think. But Tane Edmed, he needs to, I think, just show a little bit more. But he's doing the right job, I think. And it helps. Like, I know that Will Harrison hasn't had a miss yet from the tee, but Tane Edmed's still kicking at about that 85% mark. He's not the reason why they're losing, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, all the injuries, particularly the front row, geez, the injury list is just huge. Joey Walton came off with an injury on the weekend as well. Tom Ross, as you said, I think it's an MCL injury. I think they've got five or six blokes that are done for the season. Angus Bell, obviously, one of them. Do we need to question the high performance structure then? If you're getting that many injuries and that many soft tissue injuries and so many players ruled out for the whole season, and I've had people telling me that there's players who aren't particularly happy with that situation, you know, asked whether they, you know, what's wrong, why so many people in rehab, and they're like, just the Waratahs, things like that. The rumblings from players as well, it's obviously some not many happy people.
Yeah, I don't think it's a complete breaking point, but it hasn't been a great environment for a little while, I don't think. That being said, a lot of the injuries are different ones and they add up. I don't think it's a situation of like what was happening, particularly under Dave Rennie in 2022, where there was different strength and conditioners all over the shop and there were, you know, three or four Achilles injuries, and they were probably around what was going on in the training environments there. But I think that's a bit of the freak occurrences with some of them. But it does go to show that you need a big roster, particularly up front, and you can't just rush the development of some players who are in the infancy years of their career, particularly up front in the props, because it takes years and years for them to be able to withstand those rigors. So there will be questions. There's already questions over the high performance program. That's why they've just done the review, that which they've wrapped up. Darren Coleman won't be going anywhere for the short term. Whether or not he's offered a deal at the end of the year remains to be seen. But those sorts of things are being asked, not so much around the wins and losses, but is the high performance program conducive to success? Will success come under a Darren Coleman coached environment going forward? They're some of the things that have been discussed more so than the winning and losing. So injuries will definitely take a component of that for sure.
Yeah, and it's a hard few weeks for the Tars coming up as well. They've got the Hurricanes, which I don't think you ever want to play a Kiwi team, especially the Hurricanes, after they've just suffered a loss. Mm-hmm. And then they go into the Brumbies. The way the Brumbies are going, they're just getting better and better. So it's going to be a hard two-week run for the Tars. I don't know where they eye a win. They've got the Force coming up in the back end as well, I believe. So, but I mean, the way things are going, it could be a long few weeks to finish the season.
Well, it's in Perth, that one against the Western Force. There's Moana Pacifica to follow that one, and then the Reds at home. You're right, some tough games ahead. They probably need at least two wins to make the finals. Oh, geez, you probably don't see that coming, particularly with their injury woes up front. Shout out to Ned Hannigan, Lockie Swinton, both those two continued their form. They were two of the stronger ones for the Tars across the weekend. Izzy Parisi had a really strong cameo off the bench too when he came on in the midfield for Joey Walton. So I think Tristan Riley, another one who was an ever-present threat out wide, but they probably were guilty of once or twice throwing that unnecessary offload when they should have probably just gone to ground, quick recycle, and then be able to exert some more pressure there. So the margins are tiny, but I think against the Hurricanes this weekend, yeah, good luck. I don't think it'll be a pretty result.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Lockie Swinton, Ned Hattigan, geez, you'd have to think they're in the Wallabies shortlist. They've just been playing, especially the last few weeks, they've just been stepping up and have been making an impact.
Yeah,
massively.
I don't disagree. I just wonder whether or not the fact that they look like Ned Hannigan's going to join Lockie Swinton in France, that and does Stosmith just think about the here and the now, or does he start thinking about the next 12 months? And the fact there's so many exciting back rowers in Australia, we know that, you know, Rob Leota from the Rebels is still down there. The Brumbies have several players. Liam Wright really making a good fist of it. It's probably been his best season. The fact that he's staying at the park helps as well. But there are enough back rowers to think that Joe Schmidt's going to have some selection headaches there. And in a 50-50 scenario, you probably do go for the person that's staying onshore as opposed to offshore. But I would think at least one of those two will make it. Which one remains to be seen, but they're both playing really good rugby.
I would bring up Marky Marks. He was dropped against the Crusaders, came back this week. It feeling because you mentioned Tristan Riley, you got Dylan Peach at the Waratahs as well. We had Tim Ryan at the Reds, scored a hat-trick on debut. We got Corey Toole at the Brumbies. You know, where we've got plenty of talent in the wings. Do we just go, I mean, Mark's made a decision. He's making his move to the NRL. We've got plenty of talent. I don't think we need to worry about who takes that spot just with what we've seen this year.
Yeah. Yeah, and another one. I think what Noongar Nedawasi has over the others is just an aerial prowess. That's his real strength. I'd be picking him over Sulu Bunabalu. I think there's still a place in the squad. Whether or not he gets in that 15 remains to be seen. Andrew Kellaway, Tom Wright, they've been in great form. There's every possibility that Wright's at fullback and a Kellaway on the wing. There's enough there for the two of them to be in that starting 15, I think. He was all right. There was, you know, nice. The first 20 minutes the Waratahs had against the Chiefs was outstanding, and they used Noongar Nedawasi really well. There was a kick right from the outset from Joey Walton, crossfield kick to Mark, and he took that well.
He knew he had to be involved a lot more. That's the issue that we've seen from him earlier this season. I wouldn't say issue, but he needed to inject himself. He needed to work into the game a lot more. And I think what we saw on the weekend was exactly what you're saying, that as soon as he's brought in earlier, they're definitely a more dangerous team.
Totally, yeah. And Joe Schmidt needs to get early wins on the board. So I think he won't be putting lines through these guys. It's just whether or not it's a 50-50 or if he thinks that Bate is better, I think he'll get picked because he can't afford to take Wales. They need to respond. They got smoked by them at the World Cup to end their campaign last year. That's a game, particularly first up in Sydney. Knows Allianz really well, like the back of his hand. It'll be his home going forward. I think there's a nice thing about Mark's only signed for the Roosters for 2 years. You want to ensure that players have a positive experience on the way out, just as like they did at the start of their careers as well, because players talk. There's players at the Roosters like Sia Wong, who's a really talented player, that previously RA looked at, the Waratahs definitely looked at. Outstanding product, I think, from Scott's College. She'll be a partner for Noongar Nedawasi there. And those shared experiences do have contributing factors as to whether or not you end up deciding to play rugby union going forward. So, yeah, I can see the Wallabies winning four of their first five games this year. And they need to, because that'll change the mentality and the perception of Australian rugby. And so picking your best squad is going to be vital.
Well, I mean, it's some excitement going in. I know the AGM sounds a bit dire and the Rebels situation sounds pretty gloomy. But as you said at the end, there's hope at the end of the tunnel. There is, you know, we've got Joe Schmidt coming in. The Super Rugby Pacific table is probably the closest we've ever seen it before. The Australian teams are getting wins over their Kiwi rivals. More than we had this weekend is probably doesn't show it too much, just the one win, but we have had more wins over Kiwi teams this year. It's looking like a solid year for Australian rugby, and a few weeks left of Super Rugby Pacific regular season, and we should be seeing a few Aussie teams in that playoff situation and hopefully going pretty far, going pretty deep into that playoff. So, thank you, Christy, for joining me this week. It's been very fun chatting all things rugby and getting to have a good chat about the women's game while we're at it. And I'll be back next week with Brucey still overseas. So I hope to have all the listeners coming back. And Christy, good to chat to you.
Always good to chat. And Brucey, I know you'll listen. Enjoy and hopefully some stories upon your return. But that was fun, Britt. Good chat.
Good chat, and we'll be seeing everyone again next week.